This is Side Door, a podcast from the Smithsonian with support from PRX. I'm Lizzie Peabody. Picture this. A string of horses wades through a gray river. There are riders on their backs. In the middle is a king draped in white robes. His horse is belly deep in water, his own legs lost beneath the current.
You can see how the artist has painted the water as like splashing near the body of the horse, right? So you get that sense of movement.
This is Deepti Khera. She's an associate professor of art history at New York University and one of the curators of an exhibition tucked away in an underground gallery of the Smithsonian's National Museum of Asian Art, which, by the way, is where we are, standing in front of a massive watercolor, almost 6 feet across. It shows a scene from the late 1800s in Udaipur, India. Behind the riders, green hills rise up in the distance. But the sky above is foreboding. A golden streak of lightning snakes across the painting, darting in and out of swirling charcoal clouds. Vertical streaks of rain pour down.
In every texture here, the texture of the water that is like flowing in waves, the vertical texture of the rain that is lashing, the streak of the lightning, the kind of thick, cloudy texture of waterlogged clouds.
The whole painting feels wet.
Yeah, you're soaked. You as a viewer are in a position of being in this soaked land.
And honestly, it doesn't look like a great place to be. The landscape looks completely flooded.
You can see the water is halfway up the houses. It's halfway up the doors and windows. I mean, this looks like a bad situation to me.
So on first glance, this seems that there's some catastrophe, that they are kind of wading through this water, this entire contingent.
And for a long time, people thought it was a catastrophe.
It was always labeled as crossing the river during a flood.
But Deepti and her colleagues took a closer look. Examining the painting, she found an inscription on the back, translated it, started looking at poems and other paintings from Udaipur.
And it's as we started investigating this painting and researching it further, that one realized that it's actually not a flood.
Deepti discovered that even with houses submerged, rivers overflowing their banks, and rain gushing from the sky, this was not the scene of a natural disaster. So what was going on in this painting? This time on Side Door, we are getting our feet wet in an exhibition that explores 200 years of monsoon paintings from Udaipur, India, a place with a special connection to rain. How can these paintings give modern researchers a window into the past to help better understand the future of our changing climate? And how did one king's rebellion against conventional art make this possible? That's coming up after the break.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Support for Smithsonian Side Door comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is the only software your business will ever need. Featuring a suite of integrated business applications, Odoo connects your business operations together so you can get more done in less time. Odoo has apps for everything: CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, marketing, manufacturing, you name it. Odoo's got it. To learn more, visit odoo.com/sidedoor. That's odoo.com/sidedoor.
Let's leave the stormy landscape of Udaipur in 1893 and journey back over 200 years to another painting that may not appear surprising at first.
This Little Lovely is a small painting, the kind of painting on paper that you would pick up in your hand and look at very closely.
This is Deborah Diamond, curator for South Asian and Southeast Asian art at the National Museum of Asian Art. And I love the way she talks about this little watercolor painting on paper from around 1690.
At the very center of this dark gray and indigo inky rainstorm, there's a little luminous figure of a prince just wearing a pair of shorts, wearing his shield on his head as a kind of umbrella. We can see the rain like pinging off of his shield, dripping down his neck, coming down in rivulets off the back of his wrap and drenching the ground. And his feet are kind of squidging in the mud.
Deborah says for an Indian prince to be shown like this, squidging along in his bare feet, would have been really unusual in the late 1600s. The prince is all alone in the dark, his little gold dagger tucked into his pants, shield over his head, rain dripping from his clothes. It's the intimacy of this portrait that makes it so different for its time.
When we think of royal portraits that come out of the courts of India, we usually get these very formal images that present kings as powerful and protective. But this is a picture of a prince all alone on a dark night, hardly dressed. It's a very intimate look at someone sort of walking through the rain, and we get the sense that he's enjoying actually getting drenched on this hot monsoon night. I don't think it hurts that the prince is really adorable, I have to say.
This little luminous squidging cutie pie is in fact Prince Amar Singh, son of the king of Udaipur, India in the late 1600s. And Deborah says at the time that this painting was made, the prince was in that classic phase of teenagerdom, getting in a fight with your parents and getting exiled from the royal court. We've all been there.
He's in a sort of quasi-exile from the kingdom. He had some kind of argument with his father, and he's living in a small town.
And while living in that town outside Udaipur, Prince Amar Singh meets a fellow rebel, an artist who's pushing the boundaries of Hindu court painting. Because prior to this,
the style was much more abstract, it was idealized.
Like a painting of the monsoon might show a peacock or a stylized cloud, icons that symbolize rain.
But here we get a sense of an artist using his pigments in a really wet way. I mean, the clouds look wet. He clearly turned the paper this way and that way to let those slaty grays and indigos sort of pool up, just as if it was water. And then he must have taken his brush and flicked it across the surface to get all these raindrops of different sizes.
In 1698, Amar Singh's father dies, and the prince becomes king of Udaipur, Maharana Amar Singh II. He returns to Udaipur, and he brings with him this sort of revolutionary attitude about what can be expressed in art.
Tell me if this is, like, an insane comparison, but when I was thinking about, you know, he comes back to rule the kingdom, and he's had his, like, punk rock moment of rebellion, except instead of, like, blue hair and a nose ring, he has this little painting of himself walking in the rain.
I like it. No, I do. I think it's that different. I think it's that intimate.
It was customary for kings at that time to have at least one court artist, who, in this period, often painted small scenes glorifying the king, usually illustrations of Hindu epics and poetry. But Amar Singh II took a different approach. He wanted scenes of real life, things going on around the palace. He and his courtiers picnicking in a garden, throwing color on each other at the Festival of Holi, rescuing an elephant from a well, hunting tigers.
They celebrate the beauty of Udaipur, the prosperity of the kingdom, but also they build those interpersonal bonds.
So it's almost like they're creating a kind of a royal scrapbook of our favorite moments.
Yes, I think it's very much like that. Although scrapbook only is a little bit misleading because some of these paintings are 7 feet across.
Okay, a scrap mural. That was another thing Amar Singh changed. Artwork got bigger. I mean, how are you supposed to fit a king and all of his friends and all the elephants having a picnic on an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper? Once finished, it's likely that these large cloth paintings would be laid out on a low table or the floor.
And that together the courtiers looked at the paintings of those events, and then they would recount them, and then a scribe would write them down. So they become part of, just like a scrapbook, cementing memory that you can return to it again and again.
So Amar Singh II's interest in a less idealized, more realistic artistic representation combined to create a new genre of painting. But these paintings went beyond documenting royal kickball tournaments. They were meant to evoke an emotional connection to that time and place, a communal nostalgia, a collective mood. This idea of mood is central to traditional Indian art dating back centuries, from dance to theater, poetry, painting, podcasts. Okay, maybe not podcasts. The idea is that art is defined by the mood it creates in you. And there's a name for it, bhav.
Quite literally, bhav means feel, mood, emotion.
This is Deepti Khera again.
And it's through this development of certain emotions that you arrive at the ultimate aesthetic experience, something that you feel on your tongue, that you feel in your mouth, right? So something that you feel with your entire body.
Wow. So it really does frame what a work of art is about or what it's for in terms of how a viewer receives it in the case of a painting.
Yeah.
Now, how a work of art makes you feel in your body depends a lot on the context in which you're seeing it. And a lot of that context is cultural. For example, let's go back to that little handheld painting of Prince Amar Singh walking in the rain.
And it's a painting in which you can think that actually the mode in which the painter experiments with water that is in the clouds, that is on the ground, that is on the body, that's bursting around the skin, it's almost as if rain is the primary subject more than the portrait.
Now, as an American, when I think rain, I think dreariness, like guy trudging along on the sidewalk gets sprayed by New York City cab. But Deepti says this could not be more different in parts of India, where the monsoon season can last for months.
Within the Indian calendar system, you have two seasons that overlap with the monsoon months, July and August, and August and September. This is the time when lovers are together. This is not the time for someone to be away, right?
The monsoon season evokes feelings of romance, togetherness, or longing for a lover who's away.
That is very much tied to the question of the longing for the arrival of rains as well. We're talking about very hot summer months. So you're waiting for the moisture to come to displace the dry heat.
This feeling of anticipation, waiting for the rains like you would wait for the return of a lover, is so specific. There's a Hindi word for the smell of the earth, moistened by the first touch of the monsoon rains.
Sondhi khushbu, that's really the first smell when the water touches the soil and soaks the soil.
Mm.
So it's made into a perfume as well. Like,
what? No way.
Yeah. It's something that totally transports me to that joy. Like, I can associate it with nothing but a sense of excitement, even today.
And so, in the early 1700s, Amar Singh II's court painters did something new. They combined this traditional idea of mood, or bhav, with huge landscape paintings documenting life in the kingdom. These paintings brought the viewer to a time, a place, and a feeling. But they did something else, too. Something maybe unintentional. Because they show real people at a real time and a real place, they are full of historical clues. When we come back, what are the clues found in these monumental landscape paintings? And what can they teach us today? That's coming up after the break. When Amar Singh II assumed the throne in Udaipur around 1700, he brought his new punk rock style to royal artwork. His court artists painted large, detailed landscapes showing real moments in the life of the kingdom, painted in a way that evoked a specific mood. This created a new kind of documentary artwork, which you can see now at the National Museum of Asian Art in the exhibition A Splendid Land, Paintings from Royal Udaipur. Take, for example, this 5-foot scene painted on cloth.
Almost the entire left half of the painting is dominated by the huge city palace.
Curator Deborah Diamond.
We can see the assembled court, and they're watching a crazed elephant run around in the courtyard. Oh, that's quite exciting.
And on the right side, you see the reason for the elephant's excitement. Dark clouds barrel in from the upper corner of the painting. They roll over the mountains in the distance, the river, the lakes.
Sweeping scoops of water. And that's kind of where there's a lot of sort of excitement and looseness in the way the artist has approached the paint. I mean, we can see every single little lake and river has foaming water and gushing streams.
If you're looking at the painting, if you didn't know anything about it, you might think this is somewhere in the tropics because it has elephants and green and water. I think the first thing to understand is what you see in the image is not natural. It's a constructed landscape.
Mark Giordano is a professor of geography at Georgetown University. He teaches courses on water and agriculture, and he consulted on this exhibition. He says the lake around the palace in this painting, in fact, all the little lakes and ponds we see are man-made.
If you look carefully, you can see that there are small dams that have actually created them. So it's an artificial water landscape in an otherwise arid environment. The water that came during the monsoon that's sitting in the lake, it's not just sitting there, it's also slowly seeping into the groundwater system. There's more happening than you can see visually.
Udaipur is hot and dry for much of the year. Think Central Texas. But once a year, in the summer, the monsoon rains roll through and drench the city. And these rains were Udaipur's lifeline. A powerful monsoon meant ample water for drinking, washing, irrigating farmland, and growing crops. But a weak monsoon could mean crop shortages, rising grain prices, political and social unrest in the kingdom. So, a wise ruler knew he needed to make the most of every drop of water the monsoons brought. But how do you make a couple months' worth of rain stretch out over an entire year? Well, it's a little like having a husband who loves Costco. Hypothetically speaking, what happens when he brings home a whole month's worth of groceries? You can't eat all that food now.
I think the refrigerator analogy is a good one. You could also think of it as a refrigerator plus the freezer.
Is the lake the refrigerator and the groundwater the freezer?
Yeah. I may use that myself later.
In Udaipur, making the most of the monsoon rains meant building ponds, lakes, dams, aqueducts, and encouraging citizens to dig wells. By the 1700s, the water infrastructure that turned Udaipur into a vibrant capital city had been in the works for centuries. But it doesn't show up in paintings until Amar Singh II's reign. I asked Deepti Khera, so glorifying the kingdom and all of its technological evolution and the things that made it powerful and gave it its individual identity, that was new.
Yes, you're absolutely, precisely describing that these landscapes were there. It's in how they turn to them and present them to that world is what is new.
As a modern-day comparison, Mark says, if you asked someone to do a painting of downtown Washington, D.C.,
I bet they wouldn't put one piece of water infrastructure in their painting, even though there are drains, there's the manhole covers, there's water infrastructure all over it. We totally ignore it. So I think it also, by looking at this painting, you can see, okay, this was, somebody purposefully went out of their way to paint the water infrastructure because they appreciated how important it was.
When Mark Giordano looks at the landscape paintings from Udaipur, he can see what most of us probably wouldn't, an extraordinarily well-engineered system of water management. And looking at the exhibition with Mark is a little like paging through a Where's Waldo book, except Waldo is all the different kinds of water infrastructure being used. Take the painting we began the episode with, the king riding his horse, belly deep in water, the one that looked like a bad flood. At the edge of the water, Mark points to a tiny wheel that I had not even noticed. In a painting nearly 6 feet wide, it's the size of my thumbnail.
And that wheel is clearly at the level of the river that would actually make it work. So obviously it was designed to be there. And this is just the high point of the monsoon. The water's, it's completely full. The water is flowing over the top like it's supposed to.
And you can see that there are banana trees that are growing here. There are different kinds of grasses.
Back in the gallery, Deepti Khera shows me exactly how the wheel scoops water from the reservoir and channels it to the surrounding plants.
This is a very lush corner because it's being fed by this water wheel, right?
What is that little brown thing right there in the distance?
So can you see? That's another water wheel.
What?
Just look at it closely. Come here and see it. You can see that's another water wheel, just like that one.
Deepti says this painting was made nearly 200 years after Amar Singh II's reign. But in it, we can find the legacy of his court artists. In the grand scale of the painting, the bhav, or mood, of the monsoon rains, the celebration of the greatness of the kingdom in the form of detailed infrastructure. And on the back of the painting, the scribe's account of what's happening. The king and his entourage on a monsoon inspection.
It is actually a celebration of the rains and celebration of human ability to channel that rainwater to create a sustainable life for the people of this land.
It's a victory tour.
Oh, that's so well said. Yes, this is a victory tour. I'm into that.
For a long time, the giant landscape scenes unique to Royal Udaipur in the 1700s weren't given much attention by art historians, who treated them as royal portraits. The stuff happening around the king was just filler. But in the process of putting together this exhibition, Deborah and Deepti turned their attention to the landscape itself.
We learn that the paintings actually are like an archival source of information.
Using satellite mapping, translated inscriptions, and consulting with climate scientists, Deepti Khera and Deborah Diamond have discovered just how accurately these paintings depict the landscape.
It was always so uncanny to look at Google Earth and see, like, the exact course of rivers running through these landscapes.
And that enables us to look at these paintings today, not just as artwork, but as data.
As a new kind of data, I think we've just started to scratch that surface.
Thanks to One King's punk rock style, yesterday's art could be tomorrow's science. In fact, these paintings are so informative, Mark has even used them in exams he gives to his students to calculate changes over time.
You can look at the painting and see that this is what it's like now, and we can calculate difference. Like, now that it's paved, the system works differently than when the painting was made, and I can make students think about what the difference is.
It's pretty common to look at art to get a sense of, say, what clothing looked like at a certain time, or what was going on architecturally. But rarely do we think of art as a way of measuring changes in the environment. Art can also give us a window into the climate of our ancestors and how it changed their landscape. And this is proving helpful as our own climate changes. Rains are even more unpredictable now than they were in 19th century Udaipur. Wet places are getting wetter, dry places getting drier. Some places are getting more rain, but at different times of the year, or maybe rain instead of snow.
All of this is a big challenge, but it's also what we do already with water. I see hope, actually, in that we know how to manage variability of water. We don't always choose to do it, and we don't always choose to do it at the right time, but we have the capacity to do it.
And as that environment continues to change, Deepti says, art has a lot to offer science.
The thing is that since we haven't understood until now very well the genre of these paintings, that they are combining various kinds of empirical data and various kinds of emotional data. Art and science are not antithetical to each other. One informs the other.
Art provides a unique lens into relationships of the past. 200 years of monsoon paintings in Udaipur help us understand exactly how humans tried to harness the unpredictable beast we call Mother Nature. That there's beauty, danger, sadness, and celebration in the rains or their absence. Perhaps, to confront a changing climate, we can use both science and art to understand the challenges we face and how we've faced them in the past. Listening to Side Door, a podcast from the Smithsonian with support from PRX. A Splendid Land, Paintings from Royal Udaipur, is organized by the Smithsonian's National Museum of Asian Art in collaboration with the City Palace Museum Udaipur, administered by the Maharana of Mewar Charitable Foundation. The National Museum of Asian Art gratefully acknowledges support from members of the A Splendid Land, Paintings from Royal Udaipur Leadership Council. The exhibition is co-curated by Deborah Diamond, Elizabeth Moynihan Curator of South Asian and Southeast Asian Art at the Smithsonian's National Museum of Asian Art, and Deepti Khera, Associate Professor at New York University in the Department of Art History and the Institute of Fine Arts. The exhibition celebrates the centennial of the National Museum of Asian Art and the 75th year of India's independence. It will be at the National Museum of Asian Art through May 14th, and if you have a chance, go see it. There's just nothing like seeing these paintings in person. Take it from Mark Giordano.
These are large paintings, and they make a visual impact on you from a distance. But then as you get closer, you have to have a magnifying glass to appreciate what's going on.
If you can't make it to the exhibition in person, we will share images of the paintings we talked about, as well as others from the exhibition, in our newsletter. You can subscribe at si.edu/sidedoor. Special thanks this episode to Deepti Khera and Deborah Diamond. Thanks also to sound artist and filmmaker Amit Dutt, who created immersive soundscapes that can be heard throughout the galleries of the exhibition. And you've been hearing them throughout this episode as well. Each gallery features a different sound story inspired by the paintings. Thanks also to the team at the National Museum of Asian Art, Helena Guzik, Jennifer Mitchell, Mary Mulcahy, and Saranik Basu. Additional music heard in this episode was recorded at the Freer Gallery of Art on May 30th, 2003, and features Krishna Mohan Bhatt on sitar, Anindo Chatterjee on tabla, and Richard Skinner on tanpura. Our podcast is produced by James Morrison and me, Lizzie Peabody. Our associate producer is Natalie Boyd. Executive producer is Anne Kananen. Our editorial team is Jess Sadek and Sharon Bryant. Tammy O'Neill writes our newsletter. Episode artwork is by Dave Leonard. Fact-checking by Adam Bisno. Extra support comes from PRX. Our show is mixed by Tarek Fuda. Our theme song and regular episode music are by Breakmaster Cylinder. If you want to sponsor our show, please visit sponsorship@prx.org. I'm your host, Lizzie Peabody. Thanks for listening. So what I'm hearing you say is that we know all of this because Amar Singh got mad at his dad?
Maybe.
All right. That's my thesis statement. In sum, it's healthy for teenagers to rebel. That's the takeaway.
That's the takeaway.
Support for Smithsonian Side Door comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is the only software your business will ever need. Featuring a suite of integrated business applications, Odoo connects your business operations together so you can get more done in less time. Odoo has apps for everything: CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, marketing, manufacturing, you name it. Odoo's got it. To learn more, visit odoo.com/sidedoor. That's odoo.com/sidedoor. From PRX.